Tonight, Burgess Meredith stars in Stephen Vincent Benet's Spanish Bayonet from Studio One at CBS.
The flowers, Miss Gentian, they're beautiful. Just look at this one, for example.
I advise you not to touch that, Mr. Beard. It's a Spanish bayonet. The spikes are quite sharp.
If you'll pardon me, dear lady, the flower reminds me greatly of you.
We invite you to Studio One, radio's celebrated playhouse of dramatic entertainment, featuring the world's great novels, stories, and plays in special versions for listening. And now to introduce tonight's great story, here is the director of Studio One, Fletcher Markle.
Tonight we go swashbuckling back through the pages of Americana. Our story is from an early novel by the late Stephen Vincent Benet, whose fictional works have already become a real part of the American legend. You may remember, for instance, his account of the devil and Daniel Webster, or his tall tale of Johnny Pye, the fool killer. But tonight in Spanish Bayonet, we follow young Andrew Beard, south to the Floridas in the year 1774, as he goes off in search of romance and adventure. And to play Andrew Beard tonight, we are happy to welcome back one of our favorite stars of stage and screen, Mr. Burgess Meredith. With Mr. Meredith, you'll be hearing Mercedes McCambridge as Katerina, Everett Sloan as Dr. Gentian, Gertrude Warner as Sparta, and an original musical score composed and conducted by Cy Feuer. Please to begin.
It was a winter evening in the year 1774 when my father summoned me to his study. I had no idea that he was about to send me off on a venture which would change my entire life. With him was Captain Stout, who just sailed into York Harbor after a voyage to the Floridas.
Andrew, my son, you've heard Captain Stout and me speak of Dr. Gentian.
Oh, I have, sir, many times. He's the gentleman with the indigo plantation near St. Augustine.
It's the same lad. I've come back north with a cargo of the stuff.
Captain Stout has also brought me a letter from Dr. Gentian. He looks forward to making your acquaintance.
Indeed, Father. Is he coming up here to your colony?
Dr. Gentian gives no indication of such a visit.
And how will I have the honor of his acquaintance?
Your father is sending you to Florida.
What?
I did not intend to put it so bluntly, Captain Stout. Yes, Andrew, I am sending you to St. Augustine.
But, Father,
You will sail with Captain Stout in 2 weeks. I shall appoint you my personal representative. If times were more settled, I would go myself.
Well, naturally, I'll go if that is what you wish, sir.
Well, good lad.
Andrew, these are troubled times. Up in the Bay Colony, tea dumped in Boston Harbor. Here in New York, sons of liberty making seditious speeches against the crown.
Well, there's none of that whistle-belly talk down in the Floridas.
I have an idea that the Floridas may one day be the last haven for a man of property. There's a deal of money to be made down there.
Oh?
Dr. Gentian, for example. 5 years ago, he brought in a shipload of Spaniards to work his indigo plantation.
Slaves.
And last year, he made £3,000 clear. I'm anxious to discover if his venture might not be profitably copied by other gentlemen of fortune.
This is to be my mission?
And the most important mission, boy.
Does Dr. Gentian know that I'm coming?
I wrote him several months ago, Andrew, proposing that you visit him as my agent. This letter is his reply. He and his daughter will be delighted to have you for as many months as you wish to stay.
Begging your pardon, Mr. Andrew, I've seen Miss Sparta Gentian, and she's as handsome a lady as ever was.
Florida is a strange, rare country, Andrew. You'll enjoy it.
I believe I shall, sir.
Good. Captain Stout, your glass.
Thank you, sir.
And a glass for you, Andrew.
Thank you, sir.
Now then, I propose a toast to you, young man.
Yes, Andrew. Let us drink to your visit in the Floridas. And to a fair voyage.
I'll drink to that, sir. A fair voyage. It was a fortnight later that I sailed aboard the Pride of the Colonies down the broad plain of the Atlantic. Day after day, I watched the twist of our wake dwindle out behind us. New York seemed as remote as a toy town imprisoned in a fading bubble. Then one fair morning I woke and the sounds of the sea were gone. The air was warm and heavy with the scent of oranges. And through the round porthole of my cabin, like a picture held in the circle of a spyglass, I saw the vivid green of many pine trees and the solid bones of the land. And beyond, white, dazzling and strange, was St. Augustine. Do we sail to shore, Captain Stout?
No, Mr. Andrew, we have to anchor outside the bar here.
Oh.
This ship's a lady. She draws more than 8 feet of water, she does.
What's that?
Why, they're rowing out, sir, to take you ashore.
As we rowed towards shore, I could see Dr. Jensen and his daughter waiting on the dock. He had a merry, smiling face, and I was drawn to him at once. And as for Miss Sparta Jensen, she was yellow-haired with eyes as gray and changing as a winter cloud.
Mr. Beard, my daughter Sparta.
Welcome to the Floridas, Mr. Beard.
Your obedient, obliged servant, Miss Jensen. And yours, Doctor. It was very good of you to meet me. I had no idea your plantation was so near St. Augustine.
Not far, Mr. Beard. Some 60 miles distant.
60 miles? That's quite a journey, sir.
3 days by land, Mr. Beard. But Father wouldn't hear of letting you arrive unwelcome.
I'm most grateful.
A pleasure, I assure you. As for my daughter, she comes to St. Augustine on the slightest pretext. Like most young people, she finds plantation life rather dull.
And I'm certain that I, for one, shall not find it so.
But it will prove quite boring after life in New York.
Oh, my dear Sparta, do not discourage our guest the moment he arrives. Come, come, Mr. Beard. Best not stand in this heat. You're not accustomed to it.
My arm, Miss Sparta.
Thank you.
Oh, we're staying the night at Judge Willow's here in St. Augustine. There will be a dinner in your honor this evening.
In my honor, sir?
It is the custom, Mr. Beard. We have visitors so seldom that each arrival is an event. Everyone will be there.
Including Governor Daniels. I'd better give you fair warning about him, Mr. Beard. He'll ask you every sort of question about conditions up north. Naturally, you're loyal to the king.
Sir, I'm a staunch loyalist.
No offense, Mr. Beard. We're all loyal. I merely meant to warn you that the governor speaks of nothing else. No charm, no manners, a blundering fool, but still he is governor of the Floridas.
My father dislikes Governor Daniels intensely.
Indeed, then as your father's guest, Miss Jensen, I consider it my privilege to dislike him also.
Well spoken, Mr. Beard. Well spoken indeed.
At dinner and afterwards, after the ladies had withdrawn and the gentlemen were alone, we drank bombo from a great china punch bowl, glass after glass, and with each of them, Governor Daniels called for a toast.
Now, who shall be the next to propose a toast? Mr. Beard, sir. How about you, sir?
A toast with pleasure, Governor. Gentlemen, we're all for the king here, are we not?
Most assured, of course we are.
And damnation to all liberty boys. Well, then, I give you this toast to the Floridas. The king's most worthy colony, to the Floridas, home of the king's most beautiful women.
Yeah. Excellent, Mr. Beard. An excellent sentiment and well expressed. Gentian, I say, more bombo than Mr. Beard.
Oh, yes, to be sure. Andrew, my boy, I fear you've had rather enough already.
You think so, sir?
Why not go out into the garden and let the air freshen you? I believe you'll find my daughter there.
The air in the garden was light with the frail sweetness of crepe myrtle. And the moon was huge and pale, crowning the trees and the flowers with silver. A little wind stirred them like the ghost of a hummingbird. I breathed deeply and stared at a strange plant that seemed quite luminous there in the moonlight. Then I heard a step and looked up.
Mr. Beard, haven't you been inside at the banquet table?
I was there until a moment ago.
And what drove you out here? I'll wager it was Governor Daniels.
Oh, to be honest, Miss Jensen, your father suggested the air might do me good. Also, that I might find you here.
Indeed?
I admire your father very much, Miss Jensen.
Most people do.
In fact, I admire this country of yours. Orange trees, palms, and flowers. They're beautiful. Just look at this one, for example.
I advise you not to touch that, Mr. Beard. It's a Spanish bayonet. The spikes are quite sharp.
Spanish bayonet? We have nothing like that in York colony.
It's a tropical plant. If you tried to take it north, it would wither and die before you passed the Carolinas.
Well, if you pardon me, Miss Gentian, the flower reminds me greatly of you.
You're quite mistaken, Mr. Beard. If you seek for a comparison, let it be one of the Spanish wenches from our plantation. They give us problems as sharp as any spike.
I'm sorry if I've offended you.
You meant no offense, I'm certain.
Then I'm forgiven, Miss Gentian.
Completely forgiven, Mr. Beard.
The next morning we set out for the plantation. The way was rough, hardly more than a beaten trail. We rode through low barrens smelling of pine needles, through swamps where alligators slept, and Spanish moss clung like witch's hair to ancient trees. We splashed across languid creeks, past small stunted wild orange trees where the fruit hung ready to be plucked. And finally, at twilight of the third day, we turned into a grassy avenue heavy with magnolia. And beyond, as gracious as the home of any Dutch patroon, stood Dr. Gentian's plantation house.
You see, Andrew, my boy, it is quite a large establishment. Directly ahead of us, you'll note the indigo fields, and beyond them, the storehouse and wharf.
Sir, that village.
Eh?
To our left, I've never seen such wretched shacks. That's not part of your holdings, is it, sir?
That? Oh, yes, yes, that's the workers' village.
Oh.
Oh, now, Andrew, don't look so shocked. There'd be no rhyme or reason for giving them better quarters. They're animals, really. A roof over their heads, enough food, proper discipline. That's all they require. In particular, discipline.
You've had trouble with them?
Well, hardly any to speak of. A little, 2 years ago. And I have asked Governor Daniels repeatedly for a platoon of troops. The guard of 20, which we now have, is scarce enough to manage. But Mr. Cave does very well.
Mr. Cave?
My overseer.
Aye.
Extremely handy with the workers. Oh, Mr. Cave!
Dr. Gentian, does he carry a whip?
My boy, a whip is the hallmark of an overseer.
Morning, Dr. Gentian. You called me, sir?
Yes, Cave. I'd like to present you to Mr. Beard. He's done us the compliment of being our guest.
So I've heard. You're a servant, Mr. Beard.
I'm honored, Mr. Cave. Dr. Gentian tells me you're an excellent overseer.
I get the work done. That's what he means.
Couldn't get along without you. Oh, Andrew, I've some matters to attend to at the main house. If you wish to come...
Sir, if you don't mind, my father's anxious for my first impressions. I'd like to get a letter off with Captain Stout on his return trip.
Now, I understand, then. I shall leave you in Cave's charge. Ask him anything you wish. Sparta and I shall wait dinner on you.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, Cave, look after Mr. Beard.
I will, sir. You'll be living at the main house then, Mr. Beard, having dinner with Dr. Gentian and Miss Sparta.
I have that pleasure, sir.
I've been here 5 years. Never asked me to dinner. I'm not good enough for Dr. Gentian. You don't think I'm fit company. But someday we'll... Someday
I'll... Mr. Cave.
I ask your pardon, Mr. Beard. I was talking a bit wild.
Well, I'm certain you were. Dr. Gentian thinks very well of you.
Oh, he does? Please then not to mention this to him.
Well, I shan't, if you wish. It's no affair of mine.
Very well. Now, would you like to observe how we harvest the indigo?
He was a strange and surly man. I confess the look in his eyes had frightened me no little. We entered the stand of indigo, walking among the workers as they slashed it down with great broad knives. We passed close beside one of them, a man my own age, and suddenly his knife seemed to fly from his hand and whirl through the air in our direction.
What the devil, Sebastian?
I regret. I did not mean for to come so near you. The machete, it slipped from my hands.
Slipped nothing. You meant to cut me right enough. I'll teach you, you Spanish mongrel.
Senor, please, do not weep.
Mr. Cave, that might have been a pure accident.
What?
There's no need to use that whip.
Very well. You say so, Mr. Beard. All right, back to your work, Sebastian.
Si, senor. Gracias.
You shouldn't have stopped me, Mr. Beard. It's bad for discipline. They're used to the whip. All of them.
Was I wrong to ask Cave not to use his whip? This was indeed a strange country with different ways from those that I'd ever known. Was I wrong? I resolved to put it from my mind. It was not really my concern how the overseer treated the workers. And that evening after dinner, Sparta played the harpsichord. Her hands moved like quicksilver across the keys. She played quite beautifully, and the music wrought a spell across my mind.
You are fond of music, Mr. Beard?
At times.
At what times?
When it is played by a beautiful young lady. Later, after Spot had retired, I sat a while with Dr. Jenshin. It was quite late before I took a candle and made my way up the polished staircase. The upstairs hall was filled with shadows. As I walked toward my room, someone called to me from a dark doorway.
Señor Beard.
Who is it? Spotter?
No, señor. My name is Katarina.
Katarina?
Si, I am one of the house servants.
Uh-huh.
I want to thank you for Sebastian, señor. The one that you saved from the whip.
Oh, well, you're quite welcome, Katarina.
I want to thank you for all of my people. Señor, you are the first who has ever been kind to us. Perhaps you can help all of us.
I don't understand.
To get our land, señor. That which was promised to us after we worked for 3 years. Now it is 5 years and still we have it not. It was promised...
Katarina, what are you doing away from the servants' quarters?
The señor could not find his room.
I shall take him to his room. You may go.
Si, señor doctor. Buenas noches.
A striking wench, that one, eh, Andrew?
Yes, sir. She wishes to
thank
me.
Yes, I overheard.
Is it true what she said about their land?
Oh, in a way, Andrew. When I fetched them here 5 years ago, they were to pay off their passage in 3 years. Then they were to have their freedom and 50 acres of land.
But they don't have that?
No. No, Andrew, but the blame lies at Governor Daniel's door, not mine.
Oh, I didn't mean that, sir.
Oh, that's quite all right, my lad. A pretty face inspires sympathy, I know. But you see, as governor of the Floridas, only Daniels can dispense freedom. We had some small disturbance 2 years ago. It was nothing. It was quelled easily. Yet somehow word got to St. Augustine. The governor became alarmed, called them an undisciplined mob.
He refused to sign their freedom papers?
Exactly, exactly. As a matter of fact, they're much better off here. They're not really capable of taking care of themselves. You've seen what they're like.
Yes, sir, I have. Then that girl exaggerated.
They all do. An impetuous people. Now it's getting late, my boy. I'll show you to your room.
Thank you, sir.
Andrew, is that you, my boy?
Yes, Dr. Jenshin.
An exquisite night, is it not?
Yes, sir.
Sparta has informed me that you are in receipt of a letter from your father. Is there still much talk of rebellion in the north?
It's getting worse, sir.
Indeed.
Yes, the port of Boston has been closed. Committees of independence are sprouting everywhere. There's even talk of calling a Continental Congress for redress of grievances.
Oh, ridiculous.
My father
nonsense.
Enclosed some pamphlets printed by the Sons of Liberty.
Did he now?
Yes, sir.
Seditious, I'll warrant. I trust you've already disposed of them.
Not as yet, sir. They're in my room.
Excellent, excellent. I should like to glance at them sometime out of curiosity. What is it, my boy?
What's that, sir?
Oh, come now. You're sulking like Achilles in his tent. Is it my daughter?
Oh, sir, I wouldn't presume...
Nonsense, Andrew. You may speak freely. I'm your friend.
Well, sir, I will. Dr. Jenshin, may I humbly crave your permission?
Andrew, you may certainly have my permission, my most willing permission to pay your addresses to my daughter, Sparta.
You knew, sir?
Not only knew, my boy, but approved. Now then, go speak to Sparta.
No, I've tried, but always at the last...
Then try again, try again. I'm certain she's well disposed
toward
you.
Oh, no, sir, she regards me very lightly.
Andrew, you mistake lightness for what it truly is. Shyness, timidity.
Really, sir?
Speak to her, Andrew. Speak to her again.
Sir, I will. I will immediately.
Darling, my true love evermore.
Sparta.
was beautiful.
Oh, Andrew, I fancied myself alone.
Well, I only entered this minute. I've been speaking with your father.
Do you wish me to play another air?
No. Sparta, I have a question to put to you.
Well, what is it?
Sparta, I ask for the honor of... Would you grant me... Sparta, will you marry me? Didn't you hear me, I asked?
Yes, Andrew, I heard you.
I put my arms about her and kissed her. And my heart stopped as if the pointed blade of that flower, the Spanish bayonet, had pierced me with a golden thorn. And her lips were cool beneath mine, and she still seemed quite unattainable. But I was certain all that could be changed.
Andrew.
Tell me, what is your answer?
My answer? Oh, yes, Andrew. I will marry you.
My darling. A few days later, Dr. Jensen journeyed to St. Augustine. I gave him a letter to my father telling of my betrothal. And with his departure, the weather changed. Vast armies of clouds climbed the skies, and there came torrential rains which left the ground steaming afterwards. And several times I was soaked to the skin, and one morning my head felt heavy and thick, my hands were hot and dry.
Señor Andrew, you are not well.
Oh, it's nothing, Caterina, passing humor.
No. No, this climate is strange for you. You must have rest and medicine. And good care.
I thank you for your concern, Caterina.
Si, I am concerned, senor. It is because you are the only one who is kind to us. There are no others in this house. Senorita?
You are not well, Andrew.
No, it's nothing, my dear. It's a slight chill.
But you don't look well. You should rest.
Well, I'll try.
Mr. Cave can manage the plantation well enough. I insist, Andrew. You must rest until you're in good health again.
Very well, if I must.
Caterina will care for you. She's an attentive nurse. And I shall look in on you as often as I can.
But Sparta came very seldom. Each time there was a rap on my door, it was always Caterina.
I have brought you some tea, Señor Andrew.
Where is Miss Jensen?
She is occupied. Tea, Señor Andrew. Then you will sleep.
I slept, and always when I awoke, Caterina was there, with tea again, or food, or a draught of some evil-smelling medicine.
You must take it, Señor Andrew. It is for the fever. This afternoon you are already much better.
Well, take it away. I shall be up tomorrow.
You are like a little boy. Please now. Take the medicine.
Oh.
A very small little boy.
Where is your mistress? Has she been in today?
She was here while you were asleep.
Always while I'm asleep.
She is very busy.
Caterina, how is Sebastian?
Sebastian? He is well. Very well.
When are you going to marry him?
I do not think I shall ever marry him.
Why not?
For no reason.
Well, I'm sure he wants to marry you. You're very beautiful, Caterina.
I am, Señor Andrew. Do you believe so?
I think you grow more beautiful every time I see you. You should get married. Your mistress is going to get married.
Go to sleep, Señor Andrew. You have a fever. Go to sleep.
I recovered quite rapidly, thanks to Caterina. And late one evening, I opened my eyes. There she was, sitting beside my bed. Caterina, what is it? What?
It's nothing.
Well, people don't cry for nothing. Has Sebastian jilted you?
It is not Sebastian.
No? Well, then what? Caterina, is it that what you talked about the first night I arrived?
Yes. I weep for my people.
Oh, you needn't worry. Dr. Jensen's in St. Augustine now. Perhaps this time he'll persuade Governor Daniels to help you.
Persuade him? I do not understand. Persuade him to what?
Well, to grant you your land, of course.
Ah, senor. It is not the governor who cheats us. It is Dr. Jensen.
No, that's not true.
It is true. You have been very kind to us. Why should I tell you an untruth? It is Dr. Jensen who refuses us our land. 2 years ago, he refused. We tried to get away to reach the governor to protest. 20 of us were shot.
Dr. Jensen did that?
His men did, at his orders.
Well, I can't believe this. It must have been Cave.
Cave, yes. But at Dr. Jensen's orders. Senor Andrew, listen to me now.
Yes.
A few days ago, before you took sick, I find here in your room some papers, some pamphlets. You will forgive me, Senor, I took them. They were written by the Sons of Liberty.
What about them?
They say the king is a tyrant. They call on everyone to be free. Is this true? Is the king like this? Is he a tyrant?
Well, I know. At least I've always thought he wasn't.
But the doctor is a tyrant. In the workers' village, we have read these pamphlets and we know. Our tyrant is Dr. Jensen. As for his daughter...
What about his daughter?
No. I had better go.
Yes, perhaps you had. You've said too much already.
Si, senor.
After she left, I couldn't return to sleep. The rain kept beating against my windows, and thunder drummed all around me. My mind was disturbed. I knew that Katerina was wrong, and yet, what had she meant concerning Sparta? I left my room and crossed the hall down the dark stairs. There were no lights, and there seemed to be no one in the entire house. Then I heard voices coming from the portico. I opened the door gently, and without meaning to listen, I heard Sparta.
Charles, you've been drinking again.
Why? Why shouldn't I drink, my love? Your father's far away. St. Augustine.
But Andrew Beard is upstairs. He might hear you.
That young fool. Sparta. You're not going to marry him, are you?
And why not, pray?
You're not. I won't allow it.
My father approves such a marriage.
Your father is a planny gentleman. He's planned to marry you off to a fool with money ever since you were ripe for marriage.
My father is a lucky gentleman. He may have planned, but fortune sent him the perfect fool. My Andrew.
Don't call him that.
And why not? That's what he is, Charles. My Andrew.
Stop it, Sparta. Come here.
Yes, Charles?
Your father's not the only one with plans. What about our plans? The workers are going to revolt. You well know that. I've given them cause enough, Lord knows. They'll revolt. And when they do, who's going to subdue them?
You, Charles.
Of course, me. Charles Cave was not good enough for your father. But I'm good enough for you. And when I set down the revolt, you know what my price shall be? Half the plantation. Maybe all of it. Tell me, Sparta. Do you really love that fool upstairs?
You know the answer to that.
I do know the answer. Come here to me.
Charles. Oh, Charles.
In a flash of lightning, I saw them squat in the arms of Charles Cave. She was kissing him ardently and with passion as she'd never kissed me. I turned and went up the stairs to my room. There in my sea chest was a pair of dueling pistols which my father had given me. I had no intention of having a duel with Charles Cave. I meant instead to shoot him down. When I examined the pistol, I found the priming was damp. And as I prepared to change it, the door opened behind me. Who's there?
Senor Andrew.
You, Katerina.
I am sorry, Senor Andrew. What you have seen...
You knew this, did you?
What are you going to do?
I'm going to kill him.
No.
Yes, and then I'm going to leave this accursed
Senor
place.
Senor Andrew, please. You cannot go. I will not let you.
You can't stop
me. Please, Senor, you must listen to me. It would destroy all our plans if you do this thing.
Plans? What plans?
The preparations we have been making to escape, to get to St. Augustine.
St. Augustine?
Si, Senor. There we will petition the governor for our freedom.
Let me go.
Please listen to me. If you do this, if you kill Senor Cave, it will be the end of our plans.
What are you saying?
See, it is all arranged. But it is not easy to get past the guards. St. Augustine is a very long journey from here. Even when no one suspects, it is most difficult. But if there is trouble tonight, Dr. Jensen will know. He will find out. He shall have us all whipped until he finds the truth.
Katrina, I didn't know.
See? Please, senor, do not kill Senor Cave tonight.
Very well. I'll let him live if you wish it. But I'll pack my luggage and get away, far away from this place.
Oh, no. You must stay. You must.
That's impossible.
To leave would be just as bad as killing Senor Cave. Dr. Jensen would suspect and find out.
You want me to act as though nothing had happened here tonight?
You must.
Pretend to your mistress after this and hold her in my arms.
You must.
But I cannot.
You must, Senor Andrew, for my people. We must be free.
Let them get their freedom. Let them get it in any way they choose. It's no concern of mine.
That's the good of Senor Andrew. You are like that. You care only for yourself.
I don't mean you, Katrina. I'd help you in any way that I could.
Senor Andrew, I ask you this not for myself, but for my people.
You make me very ashamed, Katrina. Very ashamed.
Then you will stay here, Senor Andrew.
Yes, Katrina. I will stay.
From Studio One, radio's celebrated playhouse of dramatic entertainment, you are hearing Burgess Meredith, starring in Spanish Bayonet, a version for listening by Sheldon Stark, based on the Stephen Vincent Benet novel. Our story will resume after the customary pause for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. From Studio One, we continue tonight's full-hour dramatic entertainment. Burgess Meredith stars in Fletcher Markle's production of Spanish Bayonet by Stephen Vincent Benet.
So the days went by. Spring passed, and soon it was summer with a sky of brass. All was as it had been, only under the surface, hidden below our daily round like the gleam of fish in deep water, lay the constant current of our plans. I helped the workers to discover the daily routine of the guards, and more food was hidden against the day of escape. A few more muskets were added to the precious hoard of arms. But there were dangers. Charles Cave was everywhere, watching and spying. And one day, I was summoned to Dr. Jensen's library.
Andrew?
You wish to see me, sir?
Yes. Yes, my boy. Come in. Come in. Andrew, are these the pamphlets which your father sent you from New York?
They are indeed. Where did you find them?
I was the one found them, down in the workers' village. How do you suppose they got there, Mr. Cave?
I presume it's my fault their being there.
Yours, Andrew?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes, yes. These are the tracts printed by the Sons of Liberty, are they not?
Yes, sir. I had them in my room.
Yes, they're most extreme. Really quite treasonable.
All I want to know is how the workers got them.
No idea, Mr. Cave. Dr. Jensen, surely you don't believe I'd take them there deliberately?
No, Andrew, certainly not.
Mr. Beard, if it wasn't deliberate, it was most careless, I'll warrant.
I never took them out of my room, if you're accusing me.
Mr. Cave, apologize.
But, sir,
apologize! At once, sir.
I ask your pardon, Mr. Beard. I'm sorry. Perhaps then it was one of the servants.
Servants?
Aye. One of them might have taken them from your room. That wench, Katrina.
That's nonsense.
It does not matter whether the workers read these or not. Cave keeps them well in hand. Everything is peaceful, is it not, Cave?
Yes, sir. There's no sign of trouble.
Yes. There we are, then. No cause for worry.
Finally, we
we settled on a date for the revolt, choosing a night when there would be darkness with no moon. Time grew closer, the days and nights coiled with waiting. And then, when only 7 days remained, a packet of letters came from my father. They were handed to me while I was in the drawing room with Sparta, concealing my distaste and hearing the notes of her playing drop into the silence that had come so often between us. Sparta, will you excuse me for a moment?
What is it, Andrew?
These letters are for my father in York.
Read them if you wish.
If I may withdraw, I'd rather not disturb you.
Read them wherever you wish.
I stood beside a chest in the hall, turning the packet over and over, afraid to open it because I knew my father would grant his permission to wed. At last, I broke the seal, but before I could read, the hall door swung open. It was Katerina.
Signor Andrew.
She sounded frightened. I dropped the packet of letters on the chest and went to her.
Signor.
Katerina, what's happened?
I am troubled. Signor, keep.
Wait, Katerina. Better not talk here. Come outside.
But your letters...
No, they'll keep. What is it, Katerina?
I am afraid.
Outside. Now, what's this? What's this about Cave?
Signor Andrew, he saw me below at the cabins.
Is that all? You've been there dozens of times.
No, this time was different. I was with Sebastian and with some others, and while we were speaking, Signor Cave appeared from around the back of the cabin.
You were talking of next week?
Yes.
But you stopped, didn't you? He couldn't have heard.
Perhaps. He has been watching for days. He suspects.
You're imagining this.
No, he does.
You don't think about it. It does little good to concern yourself. He might. Well, it's quite possible he watches you for a different reason entirely.
For what reason?
You're very attractive, Katerina.
Oh.
No, I repeat, you're very attractive.
Oh, Signor Andrew, are you very frightened?
No, Katerina, you mustn't be frightened.
Signor Andrew, you kissed me.
Yes, I did. I didn't mean to.
See? You were sorry for me.
Katerina, you must be calm. If you act like this, it'll be noticed, don't you see? You'd better go to your room.
To my room?
Yes, I'll tell your mistress you've a headache from too much sun.
But I have no headache.
Don't do as I say. Please, please, and stay there.
Very well.
Stay there until morning. I watched her go toward the servants' quarters. Her eyes had been dark and tortured, and her lips had brushed against mine like frightened wings. I couldn't tell what impulse had made me kiss her, and yet now that I had, I knew it was more than pity. And I was concerned. Despite what I had told her, I was much concerned. I went straightway to my room and got out one of the pistols. I thrust it inside my waistband, concealed by my coat. I went back downstairs to read my letters, but the chest in the hall was empty. The packet of letters was gone. Dr. Gentian!
Ah, Andrew. Sparta and I were just about to call on
Dr.
you.
Dr. Gentian, I've misplaced some letters for my father. I left them right...
Please, Mr. Beard?
Yes.
I took them.
And read them also, I've no doubt.
Yes. Yes, we did indeed, Andrew. And most interesting... You'll be delighted to know that your esteemed parent approves of your proposed betrothal.
Yes, Mr. Beard, but unfortunately, I have reconsidered.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Well, allow me, Andrew. What my daughter means is that your proposal of marriage is no longer accepted. According to your father's letter, revolution has broken forth, and an outbreak has occurred at Lexington or Concord or some such place. But no matter. What does matter is that your father has already lost a good part of his fortune. He shall soon be quite penniless. Now, do you understand?
So that's it.
You couldn't expect me to marry a penniless adventurer.
Not even for love of me, Sparta?
I fear that my love for you has vanished.
What love? Such a thing never existed and you know it.
Really, Mr. Beard?
You've always loved Charles Cave, haven't you?
What do you say?
You loved him long before I came to Florida, didn't you?
And what if I did?
Who was that?
Sounds like Katerina. It was indeed Katerina. I rushed up the stairs and down the long hall to the servants' quarters. The doors were closed. Then I heard the crack of a whip. I flung open her door. Katerina stood there. She was tied cruelly to a ceiling beam, and Charles Cave stood beside her, the whip curving through the air.
Dorothy, Andrew!
Your servant, Mr. Beard. So you're part of this, are you? I didn't know you were that interested in this little one.
Cave, I'm going to kill you. I should have done it long ago.
Are you out of your senses, man? Put that pistol away.
Andrew, be careful.
You're an evil man, Cave, and like all evil things, you're going to die.
You've misfired.
Look out, Andrew.
Keep away, Cave.
Without your pistol, you're no match for me, my
friend. And also use it as a club.
Then let's see you use it.
Cave was stunned by the blow I gave him across his head. It took but a moment to snatch up the piece of rope and bind his hands. I left him there, struggling to get free while I cut Katerina down from the beam. And I took her in my arms and I held her close to me. Katerina.
My arm.
We must leave here immediately. We must start for St. Augustine this very night, all of us. Within the hour, all of Katerina's people had left the plantation. The old were helped and the very young were carried. We made our way through the darkness on the trail to St. Augustine.
It is good there is no moon.
Keep a sharp eye, Sebastian. If they attack, it'll be from this direction.
Si, senor. We watch.
Andrew!
Katerina, what are you doing back here? This is the rear guard. It's no place for a woman.
And why not? I have a sword.
Wherever did you get that?
One of the guards. He was dead and would have no need of it.
That is very good, no, senor.
Well, you must stay if you wish, but now you take care, Katerina.
I shall. There is no sign yet?
No, only the sounds of this accursed country.
This is a very bad place, senor. It crawls with snakes. There are the Indians. If they should find us, perhaps we wish for the Dr. Jensen instead, no?
It's enough of such talk, Sebastian. You'll frighten everybody.
Your pardon, senor.
Andrew, I am not frightened. Not any longer.
Katerina.
Something touched me. Here on the shoulder. Something cold.
Senor, a snake.
No. Gently, Katerina. Oh, here's the hardwood. Strand of Spanish moss.
Oh. Andrew.
Yes?
You still hold me in your arms?
I'm aware of that, Katerina. I thought you were in danger. And I thought...
I also. The danger is over, Andrew.
Not all of it. There's Dr. Jensen.
Si.
Senor, we have far to travel.
Katerina, take my hand. For several days, the slow stream of humanity clotted the trail. Some fell behind, some failed and had to be carried in litters, but always they pressed forward, past the languid creeks where the pink flamingos stirred and took flight, past the swamps bordered with red cane and rotting ancient trees, past the alligators, the hidden snakes, the sharp watching eyes of Indians staring through the tangled underbrush, past the Barrensley jack pines.
Andrew, look! Look, it is St. Augustine!
We made camp beyond the town and the flat plain. There was a deal of dust. You must have seen us from the walls, for cavalry patrol came towards us presently. And as they approached, Katerina, Sebastian, and I walked forward to meet them. But anchored offshore, I spied a welcome sight, my father's ship, Pride of the Colonies. And I pointed that out to Katerina.
It is a beautiful ship.
It's good fortune. Captain Stout is there. He can vouch for us with the governor.
St. Augustine. After 5 years, it is so hard to believe.
Hard to believe? No, I, Sebastian, believe it with both of my eyes. Observe the soldiers who come to greet us. They have horses, but not the horses of Dr. Jensen. They have guns, but not Dr. Jensen's. These are the guns of the governor. Very soon we are free.
You shall indeed be free, Sebastian.
When I am free, you know what I shall do? I shall get my land. 50 acres for Sebastian, to work or not to work as I choose. Perhaps I shall only look at it. Hey, Katerina, what shall you do with your land?
I do not know, Sebastian.
5 years to make up the mind that you do not know.
Now, Katerina shall have no need of land.
Senor, what is this?
Katerina, would you board the ship with me? Will you come with me to your colony?
Andrew, I know not what you mean.
I mean that I love you, Katerina.
But the other...
Sparta, he was only a foolish fever in my veins. Now the fever is gone.
Oh, I love it.
I swear it. Will you sail with me?
Senor, wait. One moment. Katerina, the north is not a safe place. There is a war of revolution, no?
Ah, see, the war? Andrew, what of the war?
Well, have no fear of that. By now it's over and done with and put down and completely finished. Come with me, Katerina.
No, Andrew.
You don't return my love, is that it?
I do love you, Andrew, I do.
Well, then what?
No, please, I cannot go. I will stay here.
Senor, here are the soldiers.
Well, a precious lot of ragamuffins. Look at them all, Sergeant. Not a pair of boots among them. Who in ruddy blazes are they?
Spaniards, by the look of them, sir.
Must be better than 1,000 of them. Dirty beggars. You there! Stop gaping like codfish. Have you never before seen the king's cavalry? Does anyone here understand English?
Senor Beard, you speak for us, no?
Well...
Sir, if you don't mind, I'll vouch for them.
Yeah, what's this? You speak English?
These people have fled from Dr. Jensen's plantation. They wish to petition Governor Daniels for redress of their rights.
Who are you, sir?
Andrew Beard, Captain. That schooner in the harbor is my father's.
It is. Well, this is most odd. You do not have the look of a gentleman in those rags.
Sir, may we request an audience with Governor Daniels?
An audience? I presume you can, Mr. Beard. If Dr. Jensen can, I don't see why you can't.
Dr. Jensen? Is he here in St. Augustine?
Arrived by small boat last evening. He's with the governor this very minute.
We were a hopeless lot, Sebastian, Katerina, and I, as we were ushered into the governor's chamber. For there, lounging in an easy chair, was Dr. Jensen.
And you, sir? I take it that you are Mr. Andrew Beard?
Yes, sir. We have met before at the dinner you gave when I arrived in St. Augustine.
Yes, quite so. And this other pair, who are they?
If you'll permit me, Your Excellency, they are the ringleaders of this disgraceful affair, along with Mr. Beard.
The only disgrace is yours, Dr. Jensen.
Silence, Mr. Beard.
What are the charges against these people, sir?
They are most serious. Dr. Jensen accuses them of rioting and rebellion.
Your Excellency, it was not a riot. It was an escape from slavery.
A riot? Several of my guards killed. My overseer is down with a desperate injury.
Jensen, if you please. You, young lady, you speak English?
Yes, Your Excellency.
Dr. Jensen has brought a very serious charge, young lady. If proved true, the penalty is very severe. Might even be death by hanging, you follow me?
Yes, Your Excellency.
Well, did you or did you not conspire against Dr. Jensen?
Yes. Yes, I did.
On Monday last, did you or did you not break away from your employment and flout the authority of Dr. Jensen?
Yes. Yes, I did.
On Monday last, did you or did you not willfully slay the guards who tried to stop you?
Yes. Yes, we did. But...
Governor Daniels, there's been trouble once before. 2 years ago, I've told you about that. Now, this is much more serious. They've come here to your very door. 1,000 of them camped out there. I ask you to provide me a sufficiency of troops to take them back.
And once back on your plantation?
I ask to have the use of those troops for a few months. After that, I vow I can manage. 'Tis a reasonable request.
No, it is not.
Young woman.
Please, I beg of you, Your Excellency. All we ask of you is our freedom.
Freedom. Young lady, in these times, that word is suspect. There's been rebellion against His Gracious Majesty in the name of freedom.
Please do listen to me, Your Excellency. We only ask for what is ours. We were promised land and freedom in 3 years. Dr. Jensen gave us signed papers.
That is a lie.
Now it is 5 years. And still we do not have our freedom, Your Excellency. Dr. Jensen says there was trouble 2 years ago. That is so. Because that is when we were to be freed and he refused. So there was trouble.
A damnable lie.
No. He cannot change the truth. We have been beaten and starved and whipped. That is why we run away.
Your Excellency, this is fabric woven out of whole cloth.
Jensen, if your views are correct, why should these people flee toward authority rather than away from it?
Are you going to take this upstart's word against mine? Who is he, anyway? a young rascal from the colonies to the north.
But it was you yourself, Dr. Jensen, who was his sponsor here in St. Augustine.
Well, perhaps even I was taken in by him. I've seen no credentials. He may not be the son of Alexander Beard at all, but an imposter.
Young man, do you have any papers of identification?
No, Your Excellency. I fear that they've been left behind.
Then you cannot prove that you are Andrew Beard.
I can give you my word, nothing more.
I can identify him.
What's this?
Who are you?
I'm captain of the ship Pride of the Colonies, owned by Mr. Beard's father. I will swear that he is Andrew Beard, and a man of considerable property.
Now, Dr. Jensen, what do you say?
Do you
wish to proceed with this affair?
I do indeed. I demand it. All of these people must be punished for their rebellion.
Your Excellency.
Hey, what is it now, Mr.
May I suggest that you question the people beyond your gates?
Question 1,000 Spaniards?
1,000 witnesses to the truth. Dr. Jensen has but one witness himself. One witness against 1,000.
Well, Jensen, what do you say to that? No answer. Then I propose to dismiss the entire affair. All these people shall go free.
No, I won't permit it.
What's that?
They're mine, every last one of them, to do with as I choose.
Jensen, be good enough to remember that I am the governor of the Floridas.
They're mine, I tell you. They go back to my plantation and no one shall prevent it.
Jensen, you're mad.
I believe he is, Your Excellency.
And you, Beard, penniless and a rebel, that's what you are. A rebel and a traitor to the king.
Hear now, I say. His father is Alexander Beard. Captain Stout here has already informed me how Alexander Beard suffered at the hands of the rebels. You call his son a traitor. Jensen, you are mad. I shall make certain that those workers of yours get the freedom they deserve.
You shall set them free.
I will indeed.
Beard, this is your doing. It's you who have ruined me, you. But you'll not live to laugh at me.
Before I could move, Jensen leveled his pistol at me and fired. His aim was good, but the ball never hit me. Someone had stepped in front of me. It was Katerina.
Andrew.
My own darling.
I had to do that.
You mustn't talk.
Andrew.
There, we've halted the flow of blood. Provided no mortification sets in, I have every assurance of recovery.
Lie still, Katerina.
Yes, Andrew.
She will require no further doctoring, Mr. Beard. No vital organs affected. Quite fortunate. Have her rest. That's all she needs. Rest and good care. Good day.
Katerina, did you hear him? You're going to recover very soon.
Yes, Andrew.
And you shall sail with me.
No.
Katerina, we love each other.
No, Andrew, no. We are different people.
Different how?
You are not one of us.
Oh, my dear one. There are no different people. There are some who are evil, like Dr. Jensen and Mr. Cave, but none different. I might have believed that once, but that was a long time ago before you and I met.
You believe this, Andrew? You believe this?
With all my heart. Come with me, Katerina. Come north.
I will, Andrew. Now I will.
It was more than a month before Katerina had recovered her health and the doctor would give his permission for us to sail from St. Augustine. Captain Stout married us the first day at sea. After that, we were two people enclosed in a world of our own. Around us was the broad green sea, as lucid as an emerald. But one evening off Hatteras, we struck a tropical squall. Katerina? Katerina, are you awake?
Andrew.
What is it, my darling? Is something wrong?
My flesh. It burns.
Oh, I know. I know. You're quite feverish.
Andrew, I am afraid.
My darling.
The fever grew worse hour by hour, and there was naught anyone could do. Captain Stout sat with me in the tiny cabin for two long days and nights. And finally, just before dawn, he left me and went up on deck. Katerina and I were alone. I could hear the creak of the ship straining against the long roll of the sea.
Andrew.
My dearest, I didn't know you were awake.
Andrew, tell me. Am I going to die?
You're going to live. Don't even think such a thing. We shall be very happy.
I am very happy now. You have love for me.
All the love of my heart.
Andrew, when you get to the north, what are you going to do?
No, what are we going to do?
What are we going to do?
We shall dwell together as man and wife. We shall live in a great house of our own.
Where shall you live, Andrew?
Now, where shall we live? In my home, Katerina, in the city of New York.
It's a strange place. Andrew, tell me about this place.
Well, it shan't be strange for very long. There are cobblestone streets. The ships ride at anchor off Fort George. And in the spring, the catalpa trees put out their buds. And the water cart brings sweet water from the tea house pump. And in the winter, there is snow, and we shall go skating on Lespinard's pond. And we shall... Katerina. Katerina.
Katerina.
I went up on deck. A flight of gray doves, their wings touched with the sunrise, were wheeling above the rose quartz sea. I thought back to the beginning, to my arrival at St. Augustine. And I remembered the flower, the Spanish bayonet, which could not be transplanted to another climate. Katerina was like that flower. In the distance, I could see the land from whence came the thunder of rebellion. Katerina had taught me something of rebellion. She had died for freedom. And there in the light of this fresh dawn, I knew on which side I would fight.
Studio One at CBS, you have just heard Mr. Burgess Meredith, starring in Fletcher Markle's production of Spanish Bayonet by Stephen Vincent Benet, another of the world's great stories from radio's celebrated playhouse of dramatic entertainment. Tonight's script was prepared by Sheldon Stark, and the original musical score was composed and conducted by Cy Feuer. Now again, Mr. Markle.
May a producer identify the principals in our cast tonight. In the foreground,
Andrew Beard
is played and very wonderfully played by Mr. Meredith, who is soon to be seen on the screen in the new picture, Mine Own Executioner.
Katerina
was Mercedes McCambridge.
Dr. Gentian
was played by Everett Sloan.
Spotter Gentian
was Gertrude Warner.
Mr. Cave
was played by Hedley Rennie.
Captain Stout
was played by Myron McCormick. Actively assisting were Alan Devitt, Ian McAllister, John Merlin, Brainerd Duffield, and Gregory Morton. Next week from Studio One, we're going to bring you the story of a young composer whose career was torn between two loves, an ardent young girl and an ambitious woman. Our play will be The Constant Nymph by Margaret Kennedy. It's the story of Sanger's Circus, a wonderful family which lived a life of complete freedom. And into their lives comes a young composer who falls in love with Tessa, the eldest Sanger daughter. And love, of course, puts an end to Sanger's Circus. The happy family is scattered, and Tessa suddenly finds herself growing up. This tender love story is played against a background of concert halls and music, and we think you'll enjoy it. Please be with us. Now, until next Tuesday in The Constant Nymph, this is Fletcher Markle with a good night and thank you from all of us in Studio One. Thank you.
This is Lee Vines, and this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.